Committed is a production of iHeartRadio.
You're taught to live without your soldier, and so that's what you do to survive.
When I'm deployed, she hits her stride, she's moving out. You know, when you call sometimes, it's like you're, what do you want? I'm busy. It's almost sad to see how well the family can do without you, and then you come back in and you kind of disrupt that. It takes a while to really find the rhythm again and find your spot in the house.
That's Lieutenant Colonel Mike Haggerty. Last year, he nominated his wife, Anna, for the Military Spouse of the Year award. She deserves it. During their two-decade marriage, they've moved 12 times for Mike's job, all while Anna gave birth to and raised their 7 kids. Sometimes Mike's with the family, but sometimes he's deployed far away in a war zone, places where it's difficult to talk, places where Anna's often scared for his life.
So I spent a year in Afghanistan from 05 to 06. I just got back from a 9-month deployment to Afghanistan, and then I went unaccompanied to Korea for a period of time, too.
I've always wondered what it would be like to be a military spouse, to be alone so much of the time, but then to also deal with the uncertainty, the fear. But after talking to Mike and Anna, I realized there's another side of it, too, a side that civilians like us don't often see or think about. There's the structure, the camaraderie of other military families, and the service to something bigger than you are, something bigger than your marriage and bigger than your family.
It's been a huge blessing to us. It really encouraged us and sometimes forced us to be an independent couple, both together and, but also, and maybe more for me, more independent myself.
I'm Joe Piazza. This is Committed. Anna and Mike met at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina in 1996. He was a junior, she was a sophomore.
Yeah, so we've been drinking and having a good time, and I knew immediately when she walked through the door that she was the one. And it took her about 9 more months to really call me back or be interested in me and all. But yeah, it was kind of love at first sight.
My story's a little different. It always is. So one of my roommates worked at the student government office on campus, and I remember going to see her one day about something, and I walked in and I saw him, and he stood up, and he's 6'5", and I was like, wow, okay. And so that kind of piqued my interest a little bit. So I would get information from her, but I do remember consciously having some thoughts in my head. All right, God, I know this is the one, but I'm going to wait and see how all this is going to work out. And so I knew very early on.
When they met, Mike already knew he was going to be commissioned by the Army in December of 1998. It's one of the reasons they got engaged so quickly, about a year after they started dating. That way they could have another year to plan the wedding.
Oh, we had a beautiful wedding. It was much more than he and I think, could have ever imagined or afforded. So thank goodness for our parents who really came in and supported us. It was a big Catholic military wedding. And so I think we had over 300 guests. It was on New Year's Eve. And so we had a wedding mass, and then we had a full dinner course, I guess, meal, and then cake. And then at midnight, you know, they dropped balloons at our reception. And it was fantastic because the church was already decorated and everybody already had time off and they were able to travel and everyone was in a good mood. So that time of year was just fantastic. And I still, every anniversary, people will still comment about what a fantastic wedding it was.
Army life was old hat to Mike. His dad was in the Marines for 30 years. But it was brand new to Anna, who grew up in a civilian family.
The military in and of itself is a completely different culture. You have your own language, you'll have your own foods, you know, depending on if you're in different parts of the country or different parts of the world. They have their own dress. And so it's really just a different culture. We were young enough to where we were able to be adaptive, not only to each other, but to his career. And so I think that that really gave us a good head start on this journey.
Then Mike got his first set of orders. Here's how that works. With the Army, you get to put down preferences of where you want to go, but you don't exactly get to choose.
They said Korea. And I thought, well, that's a great way to spend our first year of marriage is me in Korea for a year.
Separated, yeah.
But actually what happened when I got the orders, they got amended somehow, and we ended up going to Alaska for our first duty station and spent 3 years there. So it really worked out. It was a great first assignment.
It was this giant relief that they weren't going to be separated. So they packed up all their belongings into their Ford Explorer and the smallest U-Haul they could find and drove 4,000 miles across the country, away from their friends, away from their family, and away from every bit of life that they already knew.
Then spent 4 nights on a ferry going up to Alaska and then got off that, and we still had another 1,000 miles of gravel road to drive. And it was an adventure. And when we got up there, you're all alone together. And the only people we knew were each other.
Once they got to Alaska, they had a plan for what their life and their marriage would look like.
We would try to have kids right away, but I knew I would work up until that point, and then after that, I would be a stay-at-home mom or a homemaker, and so there weren't any issues there. And then we would just kind of get started and then see where we would adjust as necessary.
They got started trying to have a baby right away, but it didn't happen as quickly as they'd hoped.
You're having trouble having a baby when you're having, just those newlywed issues. It's not like you could run home and go to mom and dad and spend the night. It was, no, we're going to figure this out. And so we spent 3 years in Alaska, in northern Alaska, in Fairbanks. So, just a tough environment and solving those problems every day and kind of working through that. I think it really set the foundation for us.
It took us a while to conceive our first. And so I'll preface that by saying that we now have 7.
Yeah, you heard her right. 7 kids. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like to parent 2, but Anna is so nonchalant when she talks about parenting 7 children.
You know, you just take them 1 at a time. I mean, we just kind of roll with the punches. It doesn't take a lot more money, to feed 1 more mouth.
But let's back up a little bit. Anna and Mike spent 3 years in Alaska, and then it was time for another deployment.
And we say, well, that was fun. What's next? And then we move on to our next assignment, and then they say, hey, we're going to send you to Italy for 3 years.
Now, if you've ever taken small children on an airplane, on vacation, or packed them into a car for an 8-hour drive, just imagine what it would be like to extend that vacation. Along with all the uncertainty, all the chaos, to extend it out for 3 years in a place completely unknown and foreign to you. A vacation in Italy is one thing. Navigating a grocery store and schools and finding a house in Italy is quite another thing.
That was tough because we were in Italy and I didn't have any family there.
And then you're looking for a place to live. And, for us, finding a place to live sometimes, between the size of the kids, and then Anna wants to go in and, select a house based on the size of the kitchen or the walk-in closet. And I want to go and select it based on the size of the garage or the backyard. and so we work through those. And each time we've gone through that, and I think it's made us stronger as a couple. And you work through that adversity and then...
I mean, it's not all fun, but you just do it. You take it day by day. You get in a routine.
Anna delivered their 3rd baby in Italy, and it was quite the culture shock.
As soon as the baby was born, I got thrown out like within 30 minutes, could visit for 1 hour a day for the next 2 days. She was eating crackers in the maternity ward and the window, toast, and the windows were wide open during the hot summer days in Italy. The windows are open in her room and no air conditioning. Just a unique experience that she kind of toughed through that.
Good times. Good times.
Good times.
Good times are a good time to take a break. Be right back. So Mike and Anna were in Italy with 3 kids, the first 3 of 7. Italy would be the second of 12 moves for their family. For the most part, they've been able to stay together, but Mike has also had deployments where the family couldn't come with him.
So I spent a year in Afghanistan from 2005 to 2006. I just got back from a 9-month deployment to Afghanistan, and then I went unaccompanied to Korea for a period of time too. Eventually brought the family over, but we were apart about 4 months that time. So there's been 3 or 4 times where we've been deployed, where we've been separated.
These were the days before Skype, before FaceTime.
We were able to get 1 20-minute morale call a week. And that was it.
And so you lived for those phone calls. Not only do you discuss, I discussed not only what was going on in my life, but it's also an opportunity to discuss, you know, what was going on in his life or if there are any issues. And it really prioritized what you talked about because you didn't have all day to sit there and talk either. So whether you had, you know, 30 minutes or an hour, you really had to prioritize what was important. And I think that was good.
And so we would spend a couple minutes talking about, you know, how's everything going? Great. And then Anna would hit her list real quick at the last, you know, hey, I got this bill for this. We need to do this. And we'd run through it like a checklist just to get through it. But and you couldn't really be part of the events. It's not like you were calling home on, sometimes you couldn't call home on anniversaries or Christmas and those kind of things. Like for the first deployment, my oldest daughter, Catherine, when I came back from that, both on R&R and when we redeployed, that girl didn't want anything to do with me. She was, you know, stranger danger. Who's this guy? Had no idea who I was. And I was kind of concerned about the same thing happening on this latest deployment with our youngest daughter, Megan. But with FaceTime and being able to talk to her almost every day on FaceTime, when I came back, she knew exactly who I was. And it really closed that gap. You know, there wasn't that feeling of the kids don't know who you are when you get back. So technology has been great.
I mean, yeah, deployments are totally different now. Yeah, being in the span that we've been in, things are just so different. And when you've experienced that change, you realize how good people have it now. But now I feel like an old person saying that. I think the expectations have changed a lot when you go from a 20-minute conversation once a week to, you know, being able to call your spouse pretty much anytime you want if they're available. And yeah, just so grateful for that.
When Mike is away, Anna is essentially operating as a single mom. It's a big burden no matter how many kids you have.
I don't think it's any more difficult now having seven than it was having two or three. You know, it's not like at any one time all seven children need something.
Yeah, we don't have seven toddlers. We have some big ones and middle ones.
Yeah, the range goes from 18 to 2 years old.
Routine, routine, routine. The kids know what to expect. You know what you have to do, and you use your time wisely. I have a lot of people say, you know, I don't know how you do it. And I say, well, I do it the same way that you do it. I do my best every day. Some days we're in survival mode where they, you know, they've had pizza for 3 times this week now. For me, when he was gone, I would usually wake up at 5:30 in the morning, and my thing is food. So I make their lunches every day. But I do that in the peace and quiet before they wake up, because I know that once they wake up, they're going to need my attention and getting ready for school. At that point, I make sure that they have breakfast too, and then they'll go off to school. And then I do everything, gosh, I feel like everything else before they come home, because it seems like a whole new day starts when they come home. So while they're gone, I'll do laundry, grocery shopping, cleaning up, all the little things that just add up and take energy and time. And then when they come home, they're hungry. For my sanity and for the kids' sanity, they were in bed, especially the little ones, at 7:30. And that meant that I either got to sit down and have a quick conversation with my husband uninterrupted, or just sit in peace and quiet, or go read a book in my bed, or, you know, just start to prepare for the next day. There's a lot more laughter when daddy's around, and that's good for everybody. But there's also a lot more routine that I provide and stability, which they need because he's here, he's there.
I think reintegrating with your family for a soldier, at least for me, in my experience over the last years, reintegrating with family is one of the most difficult things you're going to do, because they've got it. They've got a system. Everything you do when you come back is kind of wrong, right? You want to keep the kids up past bedtime. You want to, let's skip shower night tonight. Let's go to church on Saturday night instead of Sunday morning so we can go fishing in the morning. I mean, I just, when you're coming back home, you feel like you're disrupting everything. And so what works for Ann and I, you know, whenever I redeploy from anywhere, is we immediately go on vacation where everything is disrupted for everybody. That works really well for us because it can be difficult coming back into the family. And not for any of the combat related stuff, but just because the family. It's really neat to watch Anna from afar when I'm deployed, because she hits her stride. She's moving out. You know, when you call, sometimes it's like, you're, what do you want? I'm busy. You know,
I'm double parenting here. What do you?
It's almost sad to see how well the family could do without you. And then you come back in and you kind of disrupt that. And it takes a while to really find the rhythm again and find your spot in the house. I don't know. It sounds bad when I say it like this, but it does take a while to.
No, I think that's reality. They say that coming back is harder than leaving. Essentially, you know, as far as a spouse, you're taught to live without your soldier. And so that's what you do to survive. And so when they come back, you really have to kind of shake things up a little bit and say, hey, you know, this is my responsibility now. Or, hey, can you please take this responsibility off my shoulders, or, you know, they need some discipline from dad now because they're tired of hearing mom's voice, or, you know, can you just give me support in this area, or, hey, you can have this. And so it's that readjustment time that is really, I think, harder than actually leaving.
And both of you feel like you're getting to the finish line at the same time. And so,
oh, yeah.
Like, you know, Anna's been doing it for 9 months by herself. She's ready for a break. And I've been working for 270 consecutive days, you know, from 5 a.m. till midnight. And I'm ready for a break. And when you have kids and you come back home and you're reintegrating, you both can't take a break at the same time. So it feels like you're hitting the finish line, but the race isn't over. It's, you know, you're just getting a partner on the race. And so it takes a little bit of time to work through that challenge. It's amazing how smoothly things run when I'm not around. You almost, when you pull out and leave, you expect there to be some disruption of what's happening back here. But actually, when I pull out and leave, things run smoother. And as from afar, it looks like things are held together much better when she's doing it by herself. And now that I say that out loud, it sounds, you know, terrible. But I just, from afar, you know, you talk to her and she's like, well, the kids go to bed at 7:30 every night and they, you know, they're getting up for school and doing this. And she's got it regimented in a pattern. That's the way Anna kind of approaches it. She gets on a schedule and just maintains it and plows through it for 9 months. And when you come back in, immediately disrupt that. I'm the kind of disruption that comes in after that.
Well, no, I think it could go either way. And one is either you break down and things fall apart, or B, you step it up and realize there is no backup plan. Like, you are it. And if anything goes wrong, you're the one that's got to deal with the consequences. Well, I don't want to deal with the consequences. So I would just, you know, step it up 150% and make sure things went as smoothly as possible. But that being said, I will say, it seems like when the soldier is deployed or goes on TDY or whatever, that Murphy's Law is alive and well. And I think when he was gone, our dishwasher blew up, the dryer broke down, I had to get a new washing machine, just numerous things. But I mean, I also had people in the community that would help me. And so you just really kind of have to pull up your bootstraps and...
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a big deal, but when the washing machine goes down in a house full of 7 kids,
that
is a big
that is a
deal.
Big deal. Yeah.
Mike, have you been able to be there for all the births?
I have. I almost missed the first one. I was out in the field for the first one. Fortunately, she was in labor for a long time. But yeah, I've made it to every single birth.
But that's not common.
Yeah, that's not common.
With the amount of kids that we have, and that's not common at all. We feel very, very blessed.
Yeah, it's really just kind of worked out that way, but... when we have a deployment gap, you know, our kids are spaced out every 2 years, and then there's one gap of 4, and that's where deployment happens. So, but yeah, I've made it for all the births.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's milestones you've missed out on?
When it comes to like the kids' birthdays or holidays, it seems like while the event is a big deal, we are very flexible in shifting the date. And so the kids get that very easily. So if they have a birthday that's on a Tuesday and daddy's in the field, well, you know what? We're going to celebrate it on Saturday. They're really flexible with that. And I think there are a lot of advantages that come with that. And I love it. I just appreciate our kids so much in their flexibility. Because while, like I said, while the event is important, the specifics, I guess, aren't.
We're going to take a quick break. Be right back. America's been at war for about 17 years. Mike's been serving most of that time. We all face our mortality on a daily basis. We could be hit by a bus, our plane could crash, but it's not usually an occupational hazard.
The threat back in 05, there was a significant improvised explosive device threat. You know, and that's where the enemy would bury explosive pressure plates, and as you roll over them, you know, you really can't do anything about it. You try to go down secure roads, you try to be vigilant, and you're watching for it, but you kind of get an attitude after your first few times on the road that if it's your time, it's your time. It's almost like driving down 995 and you just can't predict all those things. And so I'm not going to say you get immune to it, because you definitely stay vigilant the whole time you're down there. That was the major threat back then. The threat for me this time wasn't as much IEDs on the roads as it was the rockets. So you do get rockets. And you know, so every couple nights there's a rocket coming into the base.
Mike and Anna have had to have plenty serious conversations about what the family, Anna, and the 7 kids will do if the worst happens.
You do have all these fears, but if you have a plan in action, it takes some of the fear away. Of course, you know, you'll always be concerned for your soldier, if you do have a plan in action, it makes it less worrisome and you're able to live your day-to-day life a little bit easier. Yeah, we had to have that discussion early on, you know, and we continue to update it. Like, if something were to happen to both of us, well, who gets the kids? Because, bam, that's, you know, 7 kids. You don't take that lightly. You just have to do it. Couples can go, you know, half their life and not think about it, and bam. And for their surviving spouse, that's traumatic. And so I'm glad that we've at least, you know, hit upon that and we can deal with some of those questions because we've planned.
Yeah, and I think you're forced to deal with it pretty early. And because we've been at war so long, you know, in 2005, we were in Vicenza and there was a helicopter that crashed in Afghanistan. And, you know, that affects families in our church. You know, I hadn't deployed yet then, but, you know, this was right as they were getting their helicopter crash. And all of a sudden you're watching a family go through this as you're getting ready to deploy. And that forces you to have a conversation. But I will say that the Army, and maybe it wasn't perfect back in 2005, with the amount of time we've been in war, the Army's got pretty good at taking care of families. Mm-hmm. When something happens. They are not alone. You know, in addition, yep, to the unit that's around them, you know, there's a casualty assistance officer. There's someone that comes in that will help a family get through this. And mm-hmm. having served as a casualty assistance officer, you learn so much about what you should be talking about with your spouse. It's not a good experience, but it's an experience that's valuable to have so that you can go back and talk to your family about it. And then just know that there's all these resources available that if something happens. I think families, I can't imagine going through it as a civilian with no support, because in the military we have so much support when mm-hmm. something happens.
Yeah.
What kind of difficult questions have you talked through?
Everything from finances to paperwork, how you want things done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult decision
cremated?
For
you. Where do you want to be buried? That's a big one, because if you're an Army brat, you've been all over the world, and where is home now?
The way we kind of break it up in our family is Anna handles all the day-to-day finances stuff, pays all the bills and stuff like that, and I take care of all the long-term investing. And if we wouldn't have had a conversation, you know, she wouldn't know anything about the investments and the, you know, so you talk about that. And just like Anna said, where, you know, if you die, do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? Where in the world? Because there's so many options and we've lived all over the place. And, you know, so you have to have those conversations. And then the conversation, well, if something happens to the kids, you know, where do they need to go? And then, you know, life insurance, all those kind of things. I don't know that most 22-year-olds are having that conversation with their spouse, yeah, but in the Army, you have that conversation when you're 22 years old and you just make sure everybody's prepared.
Yeah.
And sometimes it may not be that detailed. It's just, if something happens, go grab this folder off the shelf. I mean, it's got a will and a power of attorney.
Both Anna and Mike agree that being a military family has actually strengthened their marriage.
I think our marriage is, I just know that where we'd be now if it wasn't for the Army.
It's been a huge blessing to us, not only in the ways that we've already talked about. It really encouraged us and sometimes forced us to be an independent couple, both together and, but also, and maybe more for me, more independent myself. I learned early on that I could not always depend on Mike because of his work. And so with that, it either did not get done or I had to do it myself.
From the beginning, what we talked about, where we flew or drove 4,000 miles away from family and, you know, turned inwardly towards each other to work through issues and yeah, really establish a strong foundation. It's not all rainbows and unicorns. It is, sometimes it's challenging.
It makes you realize what's important very quickly. I love that. But then you also learn to laugh. Like, you just figure out like what's important and what's not, and then things that you can laugh at.
Over time, they've come to view the constant traveling not as a burden, but as a constant adventure.
And so I didn't join the Army to travel, but the Army kind of forced us to, and I have loved it. And, you know, like I said, we did Alaska for 3 years. We've done D.C. for a couple of years. We did Syracuse, New York for a year, Italy for 3 years, and we did Korea for 3 years in 2 different parts of Korea. And when you go there, so it's not like you're just living in Italy. When you spend 3 years there, you get to travel and see a lot of European countries, and then, you know, we spent 3 years in Korea and China was right there. So our kids, we've dragged all of our kids over to, they've been on the Great Wall of China twice. Our kids pick up and move very easily. And then they reintegrate into the community very easily. There's so much of the world to see. Our kids, when we were over there, we really took advantage of kind of immersing ourselves in the culture. So our oldest boy, we were there when he was in elementary school. So we put him into an Italian school, and he went and, you know, we dropped him off on his first day. He couldn't speak any Italian. He didn't even know how to ask to go to the bathroom. And then by the time
we
left, he was, you know, navigating and helping us negotiate to purchase furniture. And we did the same thing with our middle boy in Korea. We put him into a Korean school, and now he never learned how to speak Korean. I mean, that was just a bridge too far.
Well, enough where he could communicate with the teachers.
He could ask for food in the bathroom or something, but that was about the extent of his Korean. But it was just a great experience. And in those classrooms, when they're the only American in a local school too, I think everybody benefits. I think the teachers would say that they loved having them around, and our kids were exposed to a totally new culture and loved it. So
foods and it was amazing. I think a lot of it is also the attitude of the parents. We love the adventure because we've lived in places that people only get to visit. On our journey, we've still kept in touch with people in different countries, and it's amazing. And so I think our attitude really helps the attitude of our children. And when you say, hey, this is fun, and you know, our kids have learned that wherever we're going to be stationed, God has already placed a best friend for them there, because you meet people everywhere, like good people everywhere. And it's amazing who God puts in your path, either someone you need or someone that needs you.
Anna and Mike are like these low-key superheroes of parenting, Anna especially. They've worked out how to be on the same page despite all of the isolation and uncertainties of military life. It's never been easy, but when you're on the other side of the world, out of your element, the little indignities of life don't get to you as much. You turn toward each other, knowing that your spouse and kids are the truest and best things in your life. And now that their kids are getting older, Mike and Anna's marriage is changing. It's evolving yet again.
For 15 years, I was either pregnant or nursing. And so there wasn't a lot of, hey, how are you doing? How am I doing? No. It was, well, what needs to be done? How are we going to get through this? I think at that point in our marriage, it was more about technical things and logistics. And now we're rounding the corner because we have older kids. We can, you know, like I said, go out to dinner together or just go run errands together and have an adult conversation. That allowed Mike and I the flexibility to, whether if we want to go out to dinner, just the two of us, or whatever it is we want to do, now the two of us can do it because we know that we have two big helpers with an 18 and almost 16-year-old. Legally, they can stay here. They know their siblings. They can watch them. They're old enough to help, you know, fix things in the kitchen. But there's a long period of time that you're in the tunnel, and sometimes you see the light at the end of the tunnel and sometimes you don't, but that light at the end of the tunnel has gotten a lot closer and bigger and brighter. I'm loving this stage in our life.
This episode was hosted and reported by Joe Piazza, with special thanks to Anna and Lieutenant Colonel Mike Haggerty. It was produced, edited, and mixed by Ramsey Young. The executive producers are Joe Piazza and Tyler Klang. Theme song by Tristan McNeil. For comments, suggestions, or to be part of the show, give us a call at 404-996-1173. That's 404-996-1173. Or send us an email at joe@committedpodcast.com. That's joe@committedpodcast.com. You can grab a copy of Joe's book, How to Be Married, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Committed is a production of iHeartRadio and produced in our studios located in Atlanta, Georgia. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.